You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. We made it through another week.
Yeah, man. 82 degrees, man. You going to go skinny dipping?
I don't know about
that.
Whoa. Oh, you don't want to even give that a thought, huh?
Oh, God.
But 82 degrees. Sometimes, I mean, I'm wondering. Oh, and so, by the way, that's my co-host, Sandy Williams. Good morning to you, my friend. How you doing?
How are you? 82. Well, it's supposed to be cold again tomorrow, so this is just a little hiccup.
I'm just thinking maybe it's not even worth it to have 82 for one day. So listen. So today's show, the entirety of the show is going to be spent. Trump delivers remarks at Detroit Economic Club event. And before you think, well, what kind of craziness is this? Sandy, being the economist that he is, who knows the inner workings of the things that Trump was lying about at the event in Detroit on yesterday, and he told a bunch of whoppers. So Sandy is going to critique different intervals in the speech. You are welcome, as always, to join us at 855-752-4842. Go ahead, Sam.
I think you do too much of a, you're paying too much homage to Donald Trump to call these discussions speeches.
Oh.
Because speeches normally involve some premeditated thinking and the presentation of some coherent thoughts. And when you listen to this, first of all, he's got a very odd sort of without affect voice that he decides to affect. And I think he affects this because he thinks it gives him somehow credibility,
right,
associated with all the drivel that he's then going to say. But these things are stream of conscience. You know, he calls it the genius of weaving, but it isn't premeditated weaving. His mind, he just bops from subject to subject, making things up as he goes along, and you know, and congratulates himself for being able to give hour or 2 hour speeches. These aren't speeches. These are stream of conscience processes in which his mouth moves and says the things that are bouncing around in his brain. But I think one of the interesting things about this speech is the monotonic way in which he delivers it offhandedly, as if it's. And I think he thinks the charlatan in him believes that when he talks like this, it creates credibility.
You know, Sandy, as I was listening to this, and man, what I don't do for this audience, you know, and I'm listening to this, and all I could think about is, yo, really? Let's see what Sandy has to say about what he just said.
Yeah. You know,
because he's got all these. So what normally happens, Sandy, at, say, an economic club event? And what is that?
Well, this is an economic club event, okay? So they sponsored an event for him to come speak.
Oh, okay.
But they must have made it available for the public to come. There are some places where you speak, like the Chicago Economic Club, where the audience is restricted to the members of the club. And those are usually fairly refined audiences, not prone to applause, but rather are sitting listening to someone make a presentation. So he did give a similarly nuts nutsy kind of a talk to the Chicago Economic Club, in which he managed to avoid answering any questions and responded with factual drivel. In this one, he doesn't seem to be, this is not a process in which he's asked questions. This is one where he's just been allowed to stand up and provide drivel.
Well, you refer to it as drivel.
Well, I think when you listen to him talk, whether you listen to one of his rallies or whatever, it is just cerebral drivel, and it isn't premeditated profundities. Quite the contrary.
So as we move through this, Sandy, this morning, you've heard some of it. If this is economic policy that he'll be following, does it, with you being an economist, what does it make you feel the future of our nation is during the time he's there?
Well, let's just look at exactly what he's doing in this speech. He's talking to Detroit, so he's talking to the automobile industry, and in this speech he promises them anything he can think of that would be attractive to the automobile industry, regardless of whether or not
he can deliver.
It's financeable. Okay, you can't just keep cutting taxes every direction and expect there to be a solvent government. And yet his promise is that he's going to do all of this for everybody, including the automobile industry, and we're going to end up with surpluses. You know, he talks at some point in this talk about how it is we're going to get more money in than our costs, which sounds like a business rather than a government. And he's never accomplished that in any of his businesses. You know, the list of businesses, steak, university, you know, Trump Steaks, Trump's University, Trump Airlines, Trump Champagne, not a single one of them made it, okay? Not a single one. And they all washed out because I don't think he's any better at running his personal businesses than he is at running the government, which during his tenure also began to wash out. We had, you know, the biggest deficits we'd ever had in any four-year period up to that point, and we had them during a time when our economy was booming. So it's kind of like, that's almost like putting a casino out of business. That's impossible. Oh, so, wait a minute. He did that.
So let me ask you, because, Sandy, the fear of this is that he was reading off the teleprompter in some of the instances.
Well, I think he had some facts. He had some numbers that he gave. He had to actually provide the numbers associated with some of his tariffs that were
right.
applied. So I think that teleprompter was probably feeding him some of the things that came out of his mouth that might actually have been true, because they had been vetted by somebody, and also the audience before him might have been aware of what kind of tariffs were imposed on, for instance, the automobiles.
So this is Donald Trump. We're not making it up. This is verbatim him speaking yesterday at the Detroit Economic Club event. Calvin, if you'll run the first cut, please.
A lot of young people here, a lot of college people here. The fact is that the Federal Reserve brought the interest rates down a little too quickly. It was too big a cut. And everyone knows that was a political maneuver that they tried to do before the election, but they did the wrong thing. It was totally a political decision, and inflation has started to rise. 4 years ago, when I left office, we had no inflation. We had virtually, just think of it, we had virtually no inflation for the entire 4 years. So when people made money, that was really their money. It wasn't money that they have to give back to a source that they know nothing about, including government. Under Biden and Harris, because of inflation, the economy has been a total disaster. But Kamala says that she can't think of one thing that she would do differently. She said that 2 days ago in a very unfortunate interview for her. And there are many people saying, in particular, highly respected analysts like Scott Bessent, one of the top analysts on Wall Street, that the only reason that the stock market has gone up is because Donald Trump is doing very well in the polls, and it looks like he's going to win.
Okay, well, there we go. What a start. First of all, he's upset because the success of the Biden administration bringing down inflation prompted, and the need for the stimulus to make sure that job creation continued to move in the direction that it had been moving. There was a slight slowdown in the rate of job creation late summer, and all of Wall Street, all of the analysts, everyone believed that the Fed ought to reduce the interest rates, and they did. They reduced it by 0.5%, which was a fairly sizable reduction meant to send a signal. Donald Trump fallaciously says that first of all, he says they shouldn't have done it when everyone believed they should do it and would do it, number one. Number two, he then says that inflation started going up, but actually inflation hasn't started going up. Inflation has tempered. It has actually, in the most recent readings, gone down. So those aren't true. He then discusses inflation as if he doesn't understand what it is, you know, how it is that inflation causes people to have to give their money to somebody they don't know.
Including the government.
Including the government. He talks about how his during his tenure there was no inflation. There was no inflation under Obama's administration. He inherited an economy in which there was no inflation. Why was there no inflation? Because we were coming out of the horrors of the financial collapse of 2007, 2008 that basically destroyed everyone's vision of the future in terms of investment, causing current interest rates to drop precipitously and to stay down in the negligible range from 2009 until 2020. And what caused inflation? Well, probably in the biggest contributing cause was the pandemic and the shortages that were created by the pandemic. The harbinger of the inflation was the run-up of used car prices, which happened during the Trump administration. But the Trump tax cut that he wants to talk about later was also a very inflationary move, and so was running the huge deficits that he ran during his tenure were all things that were moving in the direction of promoting inflation, which ultimately occurred.
So the one thing I want you to, especially after we, on the other side, he said, economists said that the stock market has been booming because looks like he's winning.
Well, no economists are saying that. And apparently he found one guy who did say it.
All right. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday is my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
The school lets out or in the shifts they don't get the boys together. I'm gonna get a ball and a run. Lace up them sneaks or gonna kick off their shoes. I'll miss and play the way, y'all.
So what are you on your way down to New Orleans?
This is basketball. About basketball. I went to the Bucks game last night and I thought, you know, basketball season's starting. Why not a bunch of music about basketball?
All right. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams and we're doing something a little different today. Oh, and by the way, we're going to be joined by former state Democratic chair Tom Perez at 9 o'clock. But so, Sandy, we were talking about this speech that Trump delivered at the Detroit Economic Club on yesterday. And so our phone lines are open. You guys can join at any time.
Well, you know, at one point you pointed out off the air how he ascribed the most recent success in the stock market to the fact that he was doing well in the polls. A couple of things about that. One, his poll results have been diminishing recently. Number two, what does he ascribe the great success and booming stock market of 2 years ago and 3 years ago? and last year. And furthermore, the actual reality is that Wall Street has expressed great concern about the economic policies announced because of the fact that they are extremely inflationary, to the point where the kind of inflation that could result from his policies of bigger tariffs, which increase prices, bigger deficits, which are inflationary, unfinanced tax reductions, all of that pours gasoline on a fire of terms of inflation. And so, you know, the people in Wall Street, in the know at least, have expressed great concern about his policies. I think personally that the stock market boom is the result of people listening to the show on Tuesdays and Fridays when I'm on. I mean, that's as crazy as his claim.
Well, you know, Sandy, again, the reason that, you know, I wanted to do this is as I heard this, and for many, we've got people in this audience who support Donald Trump. And so I thought even for them, it should make them pause and think that he's saying things that you really can't make happen, or they aren't true.
Well, they're the kind of stuff that someone says outside of the circus tent to lure to lure you in to the circus tent to pay something so you can watch the show.
Like the tattooed woman?
Well, absolutely. Whatever. You know, it's that's really, Donald Trump is at the point in this campaign where he's saying and promising anything and everything to everyone. It's the same promise as Make America Great Again, you know, which America, you know, that's left to your imagination, which is exactly what the snake oil salesman does, which is to promise you whatever it is you can imagine you want. It's inside the tent.
Calvin, next cut.
News. We have such fake news. I mean, I've had a recent thing where, as an example, an Obama disciple named Peter Baker, he writes for the failing New York Times. He wrote a piece about me, and just one of the many things he said that was wrong, but he said that I would go around saying that I was honored here years ago as the man of the year or whatever. And I talked about how your car industry, this was long before, many years before I ran for president, maybe 18, 20 years ago. And he made the statement that that never took place, that honor never took place. I was never honored here, which was quite insulting, actually. And I didn't remember the specifics of it. It was 18 or 20 years ago. But he said it never took place. Very much like Kamala, she said she worked at McDonald's and she didn't. And I didn't want to get into that. So what I did is I asked my people, you got to find it. When? It was like 19 years, 70. It was a long time. But I was honored. And guess what? They found it. I was.
So at this time, he pulls out a piece of paper from his coat pocket.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. So this was in... let's see, this was an update.
This is important stuff, too, as far as quoting for someone.
This is Oakland County GOP to honor Donald Trump.
Ooh, the Oakland County GOP honored him.
To speak at upcoming Lincoln Day fundraising dinner. And it says down here, the county party gave Trump the Man of the Year award at the dinner, too. And he was honored as Man of the Year. So here's your article right here.
So Donald Trump started out by saying that the automobile industry had honored him sometime. He couldn't remember when or what the honor was exactly. Told his staff to go find something. They found something. He was invited to speak to a county Republican fundraising dinner, and they said that he was Man of the Year. Maybe that was in lieu of paying him for the speech. I don't know. But this is the kind of goofiness. This is the red herring discussion that distracts people from actual policy. He's decided to pillory the New York Times to try and poke at their credibility over something that is just a matter of his ego and nothing else.
Well, when you think he's saying, I was honored for the Man of the Year, you would think that he would be talking about the city of Detroit or the state of Michigan.
Well, he claimed when his memory that that Baker said that he had never achieved. In an earlier time, he had claimed that the automobile industry had made him man of the year. And now he found out that, well, I was man of the year, but it was the Troop 72 of the Cub Scout band.
Calvin, next. Oh, okay. We're up against it. But Sandy, this is
nonsense. I think that's the problem, is that his version of policy, which we're going to get into, and he criticizes Kamala for not getting into policy, but his version of policy is totally fallacious. It's based on fallacy, and there's no specifics.
And so people need to really look at these things. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to do it today is, you know, we're 20 some odd days out. You got time to think about what your decision is going to be.
Should this person who behaves like this, thinks like this, talks like this, should they be president of the United States?
All right, 855-752-4842. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you.
Our pretzels and old pop. We've been playing all day, 'cause we've had Discord last stop. The city sun is hot, now on the courts they steaming.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, man, who's that cat coming down the street?
I don't know, but it sounds to me like that wicked man with the bone.
Sure having himself a ball.
All right, welcome back to a Friday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. So doing something a little bit different today, Donald Trump delivers remarks at Detroit Economic Club event.
Well, I just want to talk about Sweet Georgia Brown, because anybody who'd gone to see the Globetrotters would know Sweet Georgia Brown and the basketball warm-up that they do. So the music today is about basketball, but I want to mention that because I have great memories of seeing the Globetrotters on New Year's Eve.
So, well, which still happens now, yeah, every year in Milwaukee. Let's go to the next cut, Calvin.
Good for everybody. But I'm here today to talk about a subject that has always been very dear to my heart, saving the U.S. auto industry. That's what I spoke about in Oakland many years ago.
But he couldn't remember.
I said, they're stealing your auto industry years ago. They're stealing your auto industry. You got to stop it.
Well, who is they stealing?
Exactly,
who are they?
Listen. But we have to make that industry bigger, better, stronger, and more dynamic than ever before. And I've been reading about Detroit for so many years that it's coming around, and never really got there. Everybody tries so hard. But if you make the auto industry bigger, better, stronger, you don't have to worry about Detroit. It'll be very good. It'll come by its own. That would be non-artificial. That would be the way to do it, right? You make the auto industry thrive, bring it back to where it was 50, 60 years ago. You can do that too. And that's my goal, and I'm laying out a policy that will absolutely do it. In my opinion, absolutely do it. And I've been very good at this over my life.
There you go.
So my goal is to see U.S. auto manufacturing even greater than it was in its prime, and for Detroit and Michigan to be at the center of the action. For generations, this city and state were the world capital of automotive production, and American automakers rolled one iconic model off the line after the next, the Mustang, the Corvette, the Pontiac GTO. I had two of them, actually. I had that GTO. Oh, I thought I was the hottest guy around. It was crazy.
Still does.
We didn't have all of the foreign competition then. He was so proud to have a Corvette. Oh, if you had a Corvette. I never got a Corvette, I tell you, I feel. I was left behind. But I had my GTO, That was something, man. I'd put that top down.
Let's go to the next cut, unless you want to respond.
Well, you know, the thing about what he talks about the automobile industry and how he's been a supporter of it, but his politicizing of electric cars destroyed billions of dollars of investment that Detroit made in electric cars. You know, he single-handedly probably had a great deal to do with taking the rapidly growing rate of increase in the demand for electric cars and tapering it off, and Ford in particular, but a number of the, and GM both have invested in electric cars for the future. And a bunch of that investment has already turned south because of a tapering off of the demand for electric cars, because Donald Trump politicized it. And the fact is that, you know, his discussion of cars as he gets into it, we should all keep in mind the fact that foreign cars that we buy here in the United States, most of them have as much American content as the American cars that we buy that are manufactured in the United States. So that if you buy a BMW that's made in South Carolina, its percentage of American content is just as high as many of the other cars that you buy that have an American label on them. So, you know, the policies of the past went a long way towards making sure that the foreign rivals made their cars here in the United States with American workers, because we've always had policies in place to try and to buoy up the American automobile industry and make sure that it could compete. We've had tariffs on foreign automobiles for a long time.
First rule of economic club, you don't talk about economic club. That's what Tony had to say. Scratch said, I just don't get how people can't see through this dude. Tom from L.A., go ahead, Tom.
Well, Earl, as I always say, first, we the people ultimately are the government, and we will show that on this election coming up. They'll blew up and down the ballot. Get out the vote. Go to Souls to the Polls, Wisconsin.com. Also, if the Republicans are spewing it, you can bet they're doing it. It's either rejection or confession is what Donald Trump is about. What I find really, really quite amazing is that all the conservative callers that call in, they actually just say the same thing that he says. They really don't have a mind of their own. And I don't understand that. I wish that, I pray that they actually would find, you know, policies that just don't say, I will do it, I can fix it, I am the only one that can fix it. And he says to people in Detroit, if you elect Kamala Harris, your city will become like Detroit. It will be so bad. I mean, he was at the
he said the country will become Detroit, which struck me as an odd thing to tell people in Detroit. But if he thought that was a bad outcome.
Yeah, he said that it's going to be a hellhole like Detroit. And he's at the Detroit area. He's saying the country will be exactly like Detroit. And really, really, this guy is, there's something. He's declining fast.
Hey,
I just recommend everybody get out and vote.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, let's go. Calvin, play the next clip.
The American automobile, an inseparable part of the, and it was inseparable of the American dream. It was part of the American dream. But after decades of Michigan auto workers giving our nation their very best, our leaders in Washington did their very worst for them. They were terrible. You lost nearly 4 million manufacturing jobs after globalist politicians gave us the twin disasters of NAFTA, which I terminated, and China's entry into the World Trade Organization. That was a very expensive two things. Nearly 250,000 jobs were destroyed here, right here in Michigan alone. Think of it. 250,000.
That was after he said 2 to 4 million. He revised his number downward there. Well, you know, he says he terminates NAFTA, but he didn't terminate NAFTA. He entered into a revision of NAFTA, and the revisions were viewed as relatively minor, and they were really just a modernization of NAFTA to bring it up to date. And it remains perfectly plausible and possible to produce cars in Mexico that are sold in the United States. It only has a foreign content requirement in it, and a domestic content requirement built into it, as have other of our tariffs and the requirements we have for the automobile industry. So, you know, yes, NAFTA is no longer called NAFTA. It has a new name. But did it have anything to do with substantially improving the leverage of the American automobile industry? No.
Calvin, next one, please.
Business people, very brilliant business people, that took the candy out of our pockets just like you take it from a baby. That's how easy it was for them. Factories were left in ruins. Beautiful hotels and theaters crumbled. More than 80,000 homes were abandoned. You see it outside. By the time I came into office after our victory in 2016, the Michigan auto industry was on its knees, begging for help, gasping. And really, it was at the last breaths of life. And I had to move quickly. You're going to not have any auto industry here. It was going. It was all gone. It was just about over. They were going to move so fast. And I let countries that were stealing our businesses know, you do that, I'm going to do things to you you're not going to believe. I'm going to put tariffs. They laid off a lot. They could have taken it. We were at a very vulnerable point. I let certain countries know that if you do that, I'm going to put tariffs on you, and you're going to get your asses kicked, I'm telling you. And they laid off. They really laid off. But they laid off what? We had not very much left. So just as
Sandy,
I promised,
you want to respond?
Well, I mean, all of that is just a word salad. They laid off. You know,
yeah.
It's as if he was the guy that protected him against the bully. No, the fact is that there was nothing that he did in terms of jawboning these people that kept the industries from pursuing their own gain. The fact is that we had all kinds of policies in place to promote American production of foreign vehicles. Why are there Honda manufacturing, BMW manufacturing, Mercedes manufacturing, and Volkswagen
in
manufacturing
America,
all in America?
Right.
Okay. And all those producing cars with American workers, and much of it with American parts. Like I said, it's American content that matters. Okay. And we've had American content regulations and tariffs in place for quite a while. And the fact is that he'll talk later about a 26% tariff he said he levied on Chinese cars. The tariff that's being levied now is larger than 26% on Chinese cars. This is all just word salad.
So, Sandy, he's implying that he alone prevented the United States automobile industry from becoming dirt and dust.
Yeah, I mean,
and that he's the guy.
No, you're the guy that did that. No, I mean, the fact is it's nonsense, okay? And the policies that he's and furthermore, the number of manufacturing jobs that were created during his tenure, including automobile manufacturing jobs, were minuscule, okay? We lost manufacturing jobs during his tenure. And so, you know, all of this talk is bravado, but he does it in such a non-bravado. I think that's when you're going to lie big about yourself, you want to use a monotone, so that it sounds like you're not being operating with pure braggadocio.
So, Sandy, he does know where to be when he's having these conversations. He clearly wouldn't be around a bunch of the top masterminds of the auto industry talking like this, would he?
Well, who
knows?
Because
they could expose him.
Well, except I think he relies on people's civility. The civility he doesn't have, he relies on everyone else giving him the opportunity and the benefit of the doubt to stand up there and talk. I mean, he does it everywhere, all the time.
All right, Calvin?
Play well for Hillary either, obviously. I ended the disaster known as NAFTA, the worst trade deal ever made by our country. and replaced it with the brand new USMCA. Bob Lighthizer and his team did a great job. The best trade deal, they say, ever made. I actually think maybe our deal with China, but I don't talk about that deal very much because of COVID. But we have a deal with China where they buy $50 billion worth of our product. That was a great deal. We
incidentally, they didn't follow through.
But with the USMCA, that's Mexico and Canada.
There were no sanctions to require it.
To make cars in the United States of America. I renegotiated Obama's Korea trade deal, which was a disaster, to fully restore the protective tariff on foreign pickup trucks. You know?
855-752-4842. Sandy, we'll continue it on the other side. So, out of the gym, Sandy. Welcome back to a Friday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Sandy.
That was Little Bow Wow. I was talking about basketball.
little Bow Wow.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to continue as we are talking about the remarks of Donald Trump's conversation at the Detroit Economic Club on yesterday. Calvin, next cut.
The auto industry in this country makes most of its money from the pickup truck. Who would think, right? But we do great. If we didn't have that, you'd have no auto industry. You would, because that subsidizes other things. And the only reason it does is that the tariff on every single one of the big, if you didn't have the tariffs, if I didn't put those tariffs, you would be inundated with from all over the world and you wouldn't have it. Every single one of the big Detroit, the Detroit Big Three could right now and would right now guaranteed be out of business. 50% of their U.S. sales are pickup trucks. Think of that. 50%.
All right, so hold that thought, Kevin. Well, Sandy.
Incidentally, pickup trucks are the biggest source of exported revenue to the automobile industry as well. We sell lots of pickup trucks around the world, U.S. trucks. And yes, U.S. trucks are important within the U.S., but I can be confident that I could prove to you that his 26% tariff imposed on Korean pickup trucks is not the reason why the pickup trucks in America sell and constitute 50% of sales.
So, Sandy, his whole belief about all the competition, they're going to face tariffs if they don't do what I say and if they don't do it the way I want it done. So we're going to put so many tariffs on you that you're not going to be able to sell your product in America. Well, is that sane policy?
No. I mean, selective tariffs are sane and have always been in place. The problem is across-the-board tariffs. And while he's talking to the automobile industry and wants to focus on automotive tariffs, when he talks generally, he's talking about imposing a broad tariff, a uniform tariff on all things that are imported into the country. Everyone agrees that that's a crazy policy, that it will increase the price of everything, number one. Number two, we should understand that if you put tariffs on things that make that provide then less competition to the American competitor. I mean healthy competition, not disruptive competition, that the American competitors will then charge higher prices for their products. Yes, the American manufacturer will make more profit, but the American consumer will pay more for everything. So if we insulate our country and all of its businesses from foreign competition in all forms by imposing a large tariff on everything, the American consumer will pay the tariff, will pay the tariff because the price of the good will go up that is imported. They will also pay a higher price for everything that isn't imported. There's no tax there, just a higher price to the consumer. And Wall Street, everyone who's analyzed the tariff policy, the broad tariff policy talked about by Trump, has concluded that the American consumer on average would pay in the neighborhood of $3,000 a year additional price for everything they buy. Okay? That's a tax of sorts, right? It's not a tax that flows to the government, unfortunately, so it's not a tax that will abate the deficit that our government is incurring, but it's a tax that will be paid by the American people by dint of the tariff, by dint of higher prices on everything.
So, Sandy, what you are saying is, as Donald Trump promises to protect the American people from the outside, he is really, in the long run, making things more difficult on the American people?
Well, he's making everything more expensive for the American people. He's protecting American manufacturing. And to the extent that if you protect an entire industry, you're protecting workers. But his policies are just half-assed, quite frankly. It's all so that he can talk about decreasing. He'll later hear talk about decreasing the corporate tax to 15% from 21%, a reduction that nobody's asking for. And this, all of these reductions in revenue can only occur if he finds some new source of revenue, which he claims will be tariffs. But the way a tariff operates is when you import a good that's tariff, the importer, the American entity that imports it, pays the tariff. Now, the only way that it isn't paid by the American consumer is, one, if the American importer eats it and reduces their profit, or number two, if the Chinese exporter reduces the price of the product by enough to offset the tariff. That hasn't occurred, okay? That hasn't occurred in the past. And all the economists who look at tariffs and look at the kind of tariffs he's talking about suggest that the American consumer will end up paying in higher prices 60 to 90 to 100% of the tariff, and that the part that isn't paid by them will be eating into the profits of the importer.
And so, Sandy, if you look across the board, it'll be in almost everything, right? I mean,
well, if he's talking about a broad tariff on everything, so that would mean that everything gets impacted in the same fashion. And only if the tariff collected offsets the kind of revenue reductions he's projecting do we end up not in a much worse fiscal mess. Nobody projects that his tariffs would collect anything like the reductions in revenue.
All right. On our return, we'll be joined by former Democratic Chair Tom Perez. Mike, hang on the line.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.